Hello, Kavan from the Before Our Friends Die podcast and the Aki and Saltfish Digital Network here. Just wanted to give you a quick heads up about who is supporting this episode. So we've teamed up with Gambling Education Network to highlight the support available for those who are struggling with gambling. Now, we're not against gambling, and neither are Jen, by the way, but we are certainly there for more education around the topic. If you believed all the adverts, you'd believe that it was very easy to start and even easier to stop gambling. That isn't the case. People, of course, should have the freedom to do what they want with their money. But equally, if people are struggling with that, then support is available. And we just wanted to highlight that because it is intrinsically linked to a lot of male mental health. Now, with that in mind, we've put some links below to both Gambling Education Network's website, but also to a short movie they did, which highlights the reality of those suffering with gambling addiction. Aside from that as well, we also wanted to signpost the Samaritans, which is a support service available 24/7, 365, a stranger on the other end of a phone who's just there to have a chat. So that is available free of charge, 116 123. And also, of course, we are talking to Mental Coffee NN, and they host monthly coffee chats and meets. And the next one is the 10th of December at 10:30 a.m. at Bewitched Coffee in Northampton, Moulton Park. So please do drop by. We will be there as well, I'm sure. And keep an eye on their page as well. So there you go. Check the description for all those important links and enjoy the episode. Please do share it with those you care about. It was an incredibly vulnerable episode for all of us involved and really, really enjoyed having that chat with Brendan. So enjoy the episode, take care, and see you next time.
Yo, I'm Kavam.
Yo, I'm Rash.
And you are tuned into Before Our Friends Die on the Aki and Saltfish Digital Network. This is the platform where we have the conversations we want to have before we leave this planet. With that in mind, let's go. Right, so today's episode is a very, very special episode talking about men's mental health. And the reason we're doing this is because Before Our Friends Die is about the conversations we want to have, as we said at the start. But that can mean it's about the urgent conversations, but it's also about meeting people who are where we want to be and finding out how they did it. Today is a very urgent conversation, and I'm going to outline why. So there are three times as many men who die by suicide compared to women. Men aged 40 to 49 have the highest suicide rates in the UK. Men report lower levels of life satisfaction than women, according to the government's National Wellbeing Survey. Men are less likely to access psychological therapies than women. Only 36% of referrals to the NHS talking therapies are for men. In addition to this, men are far more likely than women to go missing, sleep rough, become dependent on alcohol, or use drugs frequently. On our statistics page, this is mentalhealth.org.uk, by the way, find out more about how mental health problems affect men and women differently. So you can go to that organisation and delve into these statistics a little bit more. But just before we get into the podcast today with an organisation in Northampton, in 2017, nearly 6,000 suicides were recorded in Great Britain. Of these, 75% were men. Suicide is the largest cause of death for men under 50. And that's why we're having this conversation today. Now, often people ask us, you know, why is the podcast called Before Our Friends Die? Isn't that quite morbid? And generally speaking, it's not. You know, we want to have these conversations because, well, all these conversations are a moment in time. And before we pass, we want to have these conversations, right?
Yeah, 100%.
But in this instance, this is a call to action. That before our friends die, let's have these conversations, right?
Yeah.
So a bit of an intense intro,
I think it's fair to say. That was a mad intro.
But I think it's important. It's really important that we have these conversations. So with that in mind, let's really go and introduce our guest today. We're joined by Brendan of Mental Coffee NN. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. How are you guys doing?
Thanks for joining us, Brendan. Really appreciate you. So obviously, my name is Kavan. This is Rash. We are the Before Our Friends Die podcast on the Aki and Saltfish Digital Network. And I've been listening to a few of our episodes just to get a flavour of what sort of things we put forward. And I realised at the start, we never ask our guests, how are you? So, Brendan, from us to you, how are you?
I'm going to answer this in the non-typical way because a lot of people like to just go, I'm good, thanks.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And I always stress asking people twice and looking at them and say, no, are you good? Like, I feel like asking that extra question really helps. But yeah, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. It's a struggle daily, but you know, you have people around you talking to them. It helps you get through. But generally, I'm good. But it has its ups and downs.
And do you appreciate that, I suppose, added level of inquiry when people ask, how are you? Like, because I notice it, you know, I'll be walking through a corridor. Hi, how's it going? Yeah, all good. Yeah, how are you doing? And it's quick, right? But do you think, like, particularly with this thought in the back of our minds in terms of men's mental health, that asking that added layer of inquiry is quite important?
Yeah, absolutely. I find you're often met with two responses. You'll either have somebody go, nah, I am okay. And that could be because they are okay, or it could be because they're not quite ready to share that they're not at the minute.
Yeah.
But then the other response you'll get is, you know what, actually, no, I'm not, and I really need to speak to somebody. And it just makes you infinitely feel better that you might have been that person that, you know, they finally spoke to. So I think it's very important to ask the question, because even if that person doesn't respond with, you know, that they are not feeling OK, they'll go home and think somebody actually, you know, took a little extra time to ask today.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, like, obviously in your day to day life also, but in your work life, you know, I think work is probably one of the most transactional places we go to, and we'll get into some of these themes that I'm going to mention now later. But you know, when you're in those transactional environments for a long period of time,
it gets you, man. Yeah.
Yeah, you're just an alien. No one cares about me. Like, it's just yeah. I'm here to do a job and I move on, sort of thing. But when you encounter people like yourself, Brendan, who are going to inquire that little bit extra, it makes you feel valued a little bit more. So yeah, take that away as your first lesson. If you're listening to this, ask people how they really are and mean it. Right, so Brendan, our first question is a fairly simple but equally complex question. Who is Brendan?
So yeah, I'm 26, been in Northampton my whole life. I've always sort of, I want to say I had my head screwed on, but I say I'm one of the lucky ones that's always known what they've wanted to do from an early age. I've never really, like, I've always had this like creative mindset. I've always wanted to help others. That's just been the sort of thing I've been brought up on from, you know, my mum and my dad and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's always been ingrained in me. So that was quite fortunate. But now, you know, I'm working a normal 9-to-5 job in sales. You know, I feel like it's just the same thing every day sometimes, but you know, it's rewarding to get home and know you've done a good job.
Mm-hmm.
But now, yeah, my main focus is things outside of work. So trying to, I like the word legacy. So leaving behind something that others will then go, oh, I remember him for that.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing I'd love to be able to do.
So what I'd say to that then is, I see the creativity right away. You know, we go on them. If you, by the way, if you're interested in following Brendan's journey and Mental Coffee NN, it is Mental Coffee NN on Instagram. Make sure you check it out. The creativity shines right through straight away. You know, I see the messaging. It's almost always a call to action, a reminder to check in on yourself, check in on those around you. In a lot of ways, it's sort of reassurance. I like that, you know, talking about good days, bad days, and that we all have them. And I think that's really important. And I can see that you put a lot into the branding of the, what do we call Mental Coffee? Is it an organization? Is it a charity? What is it?
So I don't like to call it a service or a charity, more of a person at the end of an account. So I posted something recently which showed my face on there, because I want people to have that personal touch and know I'm a person that's there. Yeah. And not just, you know, an organization, because I find even in Northampton there is some organizations which look incredibly daunting to go into. So I position myself as, you're just coming for a chat. Whether you sit there and, you know, don't have any input, you just want to listen, then that's all it is. You just come in for a chat, you have something in the diary that you can look forward to, a few friends, and, you know, have a coffee, or as I was reminded today by somebody, it doesn't have to be coffee, it can be tea or hot chocolate or anything you want.
And you mentioned legacy there as well. So what sort of legacy are you interested in leaving?
I say the word legacy, I think it's important to say as long as I know there is one person who I have helped, then I'm happy with that. So that then, you know, a legacy doesn't have to be, you know, a big celebrity or something, leaving behind something like that. It's not. It's knowing that you have positively impacted somebody's life and they can go forward from that day with a different mindset. I think you know, that's all it needs to be.
That's beautiful, man.
And I think to be honest with you, we were looking at the pages today, and
I love some of the content that you post. It's direct. There's a funny one that was that I read in a talk of, and I was like, the one make today your bitch.
Yeah.
That was a good one. Literally. I saw it straight away and I was like, you know, a little chuckle as well. But if you actually read it and look into it, it's true. Because we can't let our normal day beat us. We have to beat the day, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, 100%. I feel like it's annoying that this is the case, but you know, controversy sometimes sells. So like seeing something that you wouldn't normally see, such as that, it makes people go, oh, it catches people's eye, you know, it's one of those things.
It adds a different part of vim to your day as well. Like, I think sometimes the conversation around mental health can be like how we opened it, right? Just these daunting, scary statistics that you almost have no way of making a dent in or making things better because it's so bad. But when you say things like make today your bitch, you're like, okay, like shit, let me get on it then. Let me have some purpose. And I think if we're going to talk about mental health, and our next question, just so you can prepare briefly, is what is mental health? But if we're going to talk about that, a lot of the themes that I come across is purpose, intention, having something to do in your day. And that isn't always the case for everyone. But, you know, I listened to Tyson Fury today on the High Performance podcast, and he was talking about as soon as he achieved the heavyweight championship of the world, his purpose was out the window now. He'd done it. So that threw him off. But then when he was at his lowest point, his new purpose was to regain the heavyweight championship of the world. And that was a great thing. Mm. And then he was talking about how after every bout, he's got nothing left to do. Like he's just beat his mandatory, for instance. Now who else is there to face? Now, fans of ours, if you're interested in Surfer Senseis and combat sports, check that out, right? Mm. But we'd say there's always someone else. But in his mind, he's completed it. So he's always battling that I should quit while I'm ahead, but no, I need something to do. I need a purpose. And the way his personality works is that purpose needs to be brutal. That purpose can't be being a kind, loving father and only that. It needs to be a kind, loving father who is championship, heavyweight champion of the world. It's really complex to hear him talk about it. But our next question is what is mental health to you, Brendan?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to add something quickly onto that note you said. And I think the relentless side of this is winning the heavyweight championship, obviously incredible feat. It's hard to get there. But once you're there, you know, there isn't that goal. But I personally think there's never, ever going to not be somebody who needs help mentally. And I think that's the purpose of this. You know, my goal is, you know, to always be there should somebody need somebody to speak to or, you know, message. So, yeah, I think that's quite important purpose wise. But I think one of the things I always remember with what is mental health is you have to treat it like a physical illness. This is shared quite a bit, but if you see somebody who's broken their leg, you wouldn't go up to them and say, oh, stop worrying about it, stop crying about it, you know, just walk it off, you'll be fine, like don't worry, you know, they've broken their leg, they can't move. Mental health is very much the same and can, you know, make you not be able to get out of bed as much as a broken leg would. But because you can't see it, people don't think it exists. So mental health to me can be absolutely anything. It can be not being able to get out of bed. It could be struggling with family members. You know, I think the list could go on forever. But mental health is something that can't always be fixed, but can always be helped.
Yeah, that's deep, man. Because what it is, when you know someone suffers with mental health, it's difficult, isn't it? It's difficult to actually help because then they would like the help, but they don't always want it. And I think that's what the issue is as well. I think it's just a situation to help someone is very hard, I think.
If I can jump in there, Rochelle, You know, Brendan, you made a good point in terms of physical ailments versus mental ailments, but also the visible versus the invisible, right? And do you think it's difficult to help someone or some people with mental health challenges because they themselves haven't yet come to terms with the idea that, yes, this thing that I'm feeling in my mind is as important as something like breaking a leg, breaking an arm, etc., physical? Like, as much as it's difficult for other people to see it, it may be difficult as well for the other, for the person who is experiencing that, to reconcile, accept, accept help as well.
Agreed. Yeah, 100%. I think I can use my own experiences from this. Is I probably fell to the fact that I didn't think I had any sort of mental illness. But once you go and see a GP and actually talk to them, and also, I mean, I think I might speak for a lot of people here. Just on a side note, going to your GP isn't always the best thing, because I find sometimes they have a one size fits all response to people that come in and say they feel a certain way. By all means, go down that route and just see what happens. But I think it's very important to speak to a number of people and tell them how you feel and see, you know, their experiences. So, yeah, it's very hard to come to terms yourself with the fact that you might have a mental illness. 100%.
And if you don't mind me asking, you know, what was that journey for you from, well, if we work backwards from going to the GP, what was that? What was that journey? What were those experiences like that made you think, yeah, maybe I should go see the GP?
Yeah. So for me, it was at the start of lockdown. So I've always been a crazy positive person. Like, everyone always said, oh, you're so like positive, you're so good. And genuinely, I was that person. I felt that myself. I was always positive. Then lockdown hit, and I think this was a lot of the same for everybody. I spent time alone in a house for a long time. But then what would happen is I would get to a certain point in the day and start turning to alcohol. So this wasn't like, you know, I wouldn't say abusing alcohol. I was never getting, you know, drunk or anything like that. But every day at a certain time, because I knew there'd be nothing going on in the evening because we're in lockdown, I'd just have a drink or two. And then I realized, you know, I'm actually masking something here. And that thing was loneliness. I was drinking those things because it numbed the thoughts in my head weren't going on when that happened. So I slowly realized, you know, I can't keep doing this. It's gonna, you know, for lack of the word, it's gonna kill me. So I had to speak to somebody, and I thought, you know, I'll go to my GP and see how that goes first of all. And then when speaking to my GP, he did diagnose me with depression at the time. When speaking to him, I felt like I didn't really get my point across or how I was feeling before he sort of just told me I had this thing. I don't really feel like I was listened to at that time, which is why I didn't have a positive experience there. But everybody's journey is different, you know. But definitely going helped me realize that, you know, I did have something wrong with me.
Did you speak to anyone else after the GP, or?
I did, yeah. So I did start speaking to a few friends and family.
Yeah.
Bear with me. I did start speaking to a few friends and family, and some people do get it, some people don't, but I don't think it is something to frown upon if there is somebody that, you know, doesn't quite understand those feelings or thoughts you're going through. Some people won't, and I don't think they should be judged for that. The only thing you can do is, you know, share articles with them or things you've seen that sort of describe how you feel. At the end of the day, the only person that could really help you is you. But you can get certain bits of help from other people.
You mentioned there about when you were drinking alcohol, you know, effectively masking feelings of loneliness, and the lockdown was a key part to play in that as well. And you particularly mentioned how alcohol was masking those thoughts in your mind. If you don't mind me asking, what were some of those thoughts? And
So this is something I've worked on recently, and it's been a really big change. But I was speaking to my friends in the wrong way. So I was asking them, are you free tonight? At this time, can we do this? And I am not thinking of other people, and you know, they have things going on in their life. So then when I'd receive a, oh no, I'm busy tonight, my mind would instantly go to, they don't want to spend time with me, they don't want to see me, they don't want to, you know, do this thing with me, instead of, oh, they're probably just busy. And then my mind couldn't find something else to do, you know. So that was why, you know, I sort of struggled with the loneliness side of it, because I felt like these people were like, it was definitely a thought in my head and not the truth, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It felt like they didn't want to speak to me, but in, you know, the other case, it was just them being busy.
If I can ask, because you've set up a train of thoughts in my mind, how would you, now knowing what you know, ask a question like that better?
So this was actually helped to my partner, Caitlin, who will also be joining me on the mental coffee journey for the women's side.
Wicked.
But I sat and spoke with her about it, and she came up with a solution. I was just like, why have I not thought of this before? But instead of asking somebody and not forcing a time on them or forcing an event on them, saying, I would really like to arrange a time to see you. Could you let me know when you're next free? It'd be good to get something in. That puts it in their hands. Not only will you funnel out the people that do want to make an effort to see you or not, you will also have people go, of course, yeah, I definitely want to see you, I'm free on this date, can we do them? I sent that message on one evening to about six of my friends that, you know, I either constantly speak to or haven't spoken to in a while, and every single one of them came back with a date and time. And I just couldn't believe it. But it's just a tiny change in like the way you position a question or put something to somebody. It just changes the way they come back to you, you know.
I don't know if I'm more impressed at the question you asked or the fact that you got six friends to ask it to. I was thinking in my mind, who would...
But here's an important thing as well. My friendship group is really small. And I say six friends, you know, I have two mates who are, you know, my two best mates. But
yeah.
Then you have those people that, you know, you speak to every now and then. It could be a colleague or, you know, a family friend or something like that. But this is one of the things that I really struggled with, is if things aren't reciprocated, I will keep my circle small, I will cut people out, and that I think contributed to my loneliness at the time. But I think quality over quantity with friends all the time, and I will preach that to anybody. I think it's important to have people that you know would be there for you and have your back no matter what, than have 10 friends where nine of them wouldn't be there for you if you needed them.
I wanted to ask, like, how important has it been for you to look inward and to say, you know what, actually the way I was framing these interactions was harming me and my friendships, rather than as the mind can do at times, like, the world is being bad to me? And how long has that process been? Because how do I put it, it's difficult, isn't it? It's really challenging to sometimes reframe the way your mind thinks by default. But to be that self-aware is a positive trait, right? So what was that process like for you?
I mean, I'll be totally honest. I've tried to figure out myself. I really have. Tried to figure out different ways of doing things, but just haven't really found that correct way. And it was speaking to somebody else that really helped me realize that. So Caitlin, my partner, just speaking to her about it and her saying, well, why don't you try this? So I don't know if I ever would have found a way to get out of that, you know, way of, you know, dealing with relationships and friendships around me without speaking to somebody else. So I think, you can try as much as you can, you know, you can every single day try something internally to make your life better, but sometimes you do need a different perspective, and that's why I think it's important to speak to people, no matter how big or small the problem is.
So talking of speaking to people, then let's jump into Mental Coffee NN. If we were to give you the platform right now to say, you know, tell us all you want us to know about it and the audience in particular, what things would you tell them?
So first of all, I would say I am just a friend, and Caitlin, who will be doing the women's meetings, is just a friend. It's like meeting up with a mate for a coffee. There's no pressure involved at all. There's no need to come and, you know, tell everybody your emotions or put it all on the table for everybody to hear. If you do want to come along and just sit there and listen to other people, you could resonate or hear a piece of advice and go home from that meeting and find a new way of looking at things or dealing with your own emotions. On the flip side, if you do want to come and you have been through stuff mentally in the past, but want to share your experiences and how you overcame them, it's also a platform to do that. I am no mental health expert. I just know how to, you know, speak to people in the right way to make them feel heard and like they can unleash those emotions. So I think it's important to, you know, have this feel as natural as possible. It's not somewhere where you're speaking to a therapist or anything like that, because those can be quite daunting. It's just, you know, having a date in the diary where you can look forward to it and go, oh, I've got something to look forward to.
Mm.
I'm just going to say a couple of, not by name, but people that have come and what they sort of did.
Please do.
So we had one person who, this was on the third or fourth meeting, and they let me know once they got to the table what they've been doing. So they'd walk past the front door of the shop about four times, peering in just to see the table and if there was people on it and stuff like that. They then came into the coffee shop and sat at a table, which was a couple of tables down from where we were sitting. And then when they realized, you know, oh, they are just having a normal chat, they then came over and sat with us. I don't think it can be underestimated how big that is for that person to be able to come over and sit down.
Mm-hmm.
But it shows, you know, that, I mean, that person sat there and then started telling us about him and who he was and what he was struggling with. And he probably walked away from that feeling so glad that he did. The second one is, and this is, he won't mind me sharing his name because I've spoken to him about it. His name is Carl. And instead of struggling with something mentally, he's struggling with something physically, which is then affecting his mental health. So just back pains that he's having. But he's not found anybody that's going through that same thing. So what he hopes from the meetings is to meet somebody who has that same, you know, thing that might be going on in their life, and how are they coping and how are they getting through it and that sort of thing. So it's also coming to find somebody who's struggling with the same things as you mentally or physically. So, yeah, I think that's very important as well.
Rochelle?
Yeah, I was going to say, when did you think of this idea or this coffee meeting? When did you think of this?
It was actually at one of my lowest points. I was struggling quite heavily with loneliness. I was in a relationship where, you know, I needed to get out, and I was, you know, feeling at one of my worst points. So I thought, you know what, I actually need somebody to speak to. But I don't typically want to go down the, you know, the therapist route or anything like that. I think personally what I needed was just to have people around me that were going through the same thing and I could resonate with. So I ended up having, you know, I've got a WhatsApp chat, which anybody can get added to. So if you do want to join that, please let me know. Just send a DM to Mental Coffee. I can add you to that. But sometimes just updating people with your day and how you're getting on. They'll be like, oh, I did this today. And, you know, it's just having a few mates, really. And that's the most important part about it for me. It's having regular people that I can go to that won't judge me for how I'm feeling, or, you know, being a man, letting my emotions go. I have a group of people that all are trying to deal with their emotions. So it's good to, you know, speak to people who are going through the same thing.
How did you find the people? Did you start off with friends, or was it just random people that saw the Instagram and the meetings itself? Because I think personally, sometimes it's good to speak to someone random.
Yeah.
Than someone that knows you. And sometimes you can be a bit more honest with that random person. I think that always helps me personally anyway.
Can I ask why, Rochelle?
I don't know, man. They don't know me. And for example, if it is someone random that I won't probably see again, like, I don't think I'll be judged. If it was like a friend or family member judged me, they'll probably judge you and all that other stuff, or blame on something, and they know you as a person.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a weird one. You asked me that question. I can't really answer it.
When you say judge, like, what's the? Is it because they have a preconceived notion of who you are?
Yeah, that's probably that's a better way to say it.
Is vulnerability not a part of that?
Yeah, I guess so.
Why not?
I don't know, man. You just don't want to. Me personally, anyway, I don't want to look weak or weak to someone in theory, so a friend or family member. But I think I could be more vulnerable to someone random. Like, they don't know me. Don't know. You made me deep life there.
But this is what I was trying to get at, because you know, Brendan, you were talking about being that positive person, and everyone knew you as a positive person. And sometimes when you are known as one thing, it can be quite stifling, because you can't then show any of that vulnerability or any of that. It's not, it can be perceived as weakness, but it isn't necessarily weakness, right? But you can't show any of that vulnerability or need for help, because you've always been that person who is positive or strong, etc. And I think that's the source of a lot of our problems as men, particularly given the whole, how deep we don't get into this, right? The notion that men can't be vulnerable. Men have to be these strong, alpha stoic male providers, alpha males. And listen, I could go on all day, but you know what I'm trying to say?
I absolutely hate, and this is one of the things, and hate is a strong word, but when the phrase man up is used, I think there is a lot of things, a lot of industries, such as, you know, I'll just list a few: construction, where everybody generally is a male, and has to be, you know, rough, ready, you know, I don't cry, I don't do this. I can almost guarantee 50-60% of those people are struggling so badly, whether it be with money or, you know, it could be anything, but they will always have to put up a front. They will never ever be able to, you know, come into work and go, you know what, I really am struggling with stuff at home, and, you know, it's impacting me. They won't. They'll just go to work and just try and see it through. And I just don't think that's the right way. I think it's important to add on to your note about speaking to your friends and family. You don't want to appear weak to them. But I think, you know, only you will know when the right time is, or maybe the right time is never. But speaking to somebody within that support network within your family to, you know, to tell them how you feel, I think you'll actually be surprised with how they react. I don't think they're gonna, you know, tell you that, you know, you're acting stupid or anything like that. You'll probably be surprised that they come back and be like, I had no idea.
I think sometimes we have to lean into the, and this is, I'm about to say a sentence that is a lot easier said than done, but sometimes we have to lean into those courageous conversations. And I'm saying this while listing off a list of the courageous conversations I haven't had in my own mind. But I think sometimes we have to lean into those courageous conversations and, you know, have chats that are difficult for the sake of, even if you want to be selfish about it, for the sake of us, but also for the sake of others as well. You may then open up someone else, for them to open up to you. I wanted to talk about, Rachel, I'm going to say two words to you, and it's going to mean a lot to you, I hope. Brendan, this is going to mean absolutely nothing to you, but we'll explain. Project Mind.
Okay,
So we were about 17, and you mentioned a guy who, Carl, I think his name was, who came to the coffee session, and he had a back problem. And that physical ailment led to him, you know, having challenges mentally. And that really, really resonated with me, because, when I was about 17, I had some surgery on both calves and both feet at the same time, which, as you can imagine, left me wheelchair bound for about 6 weeks until the body recovered. Right.
Now, the summer holidays as well.
Some holidays, bro. Some holidays were rubbish. Got right in the middle of my driving lessons as well. But anyway, that led to a lot of things. Obviously, you know, I'm 17 years old, and my brothers are having to give me a piggyback to get to the car, or my little brother's pushing me around the park in a wheelchair. Like, it's real, real strange for me, anyway, for the way I was living my life. It wasn't something I was accustomed to. And that, obviously, you don't want to call up your friends and say, yeah, do you want to come and chill? Like, oh, what can we do? I don't know. Like,
push me about, bro.
Yeah. Like, it just wasn't a conversation I wanted to have. I didn't want to be seen in a wheelchair at that time. So that obviously inevitably led to a bit of loneliness, right? And during that time, I thought, because I was having chats with people that basically alluded to the fact that I wasn't feeling too great. But again, it was like, oh, you're young, like you got your whole life ahead of you, you'll be fine. What have you got to be worried about? And I thought, okay, so I know I'm going to get better. My body's going to recover. I'm going to be standing up again, and I'm going to be active, right? And all those sorts of things. I'll be able to see my friends again. All that's perfect, or will be perfect, you know. But at that time, I didn't feel able to talk. But what if someone was going through that day in, day out for longer than 6 weeks, for longer than the recovery period of time? What could I do, we do, to support them? And around the same time, we had an organization called Young Enterprise coming into school, and they encourage people to either set up commercial businesses or social enterprises. So along that vein, we set up a social enterprise called Project Mind, Rochelle and I and a few other friends. And that was really about making the invisible visible. So the same thing you mentioned about breaking an arm or breaking a leg is visible. Mental health is invisible. And importantly, young people's mental health, and in this instance, male mental health, is so, so overlooked because of what we presume of young people, and particularly what we presume as men. It's the biggest killer of men below 50.
That is
a huge cry for help. If you look at the numbers, huge cry for help. And I still don't think we have those conversations often enough. And, you know, even reflecting on it, Project Mind is no longer a thing. This was when we were 17 years old. We're now 25, 26. So we've let that go. Was it easier at the time to let it go than to carry it on, do you think? And do you think that's why we did it?
Yeah, 100%.
So I think you know, we have to ask ourselves those questions in terms of like how committed are we? And I think maybe it's about starting small and then going big. I think we started too big.
Has anything changed in them 7 years?
I think so. I think it's a lot more of a topical conversation. I mean, Brendan, what are your thoughts in terms of, you know, we're a similar age. When you were 17, is this something that you were talking about, or is it something that is more acceptable now?
I would say it's definitely with the rise of social media in the last, I don't know how many years it's been going. It feels like too long now. But with the rise of social media, I think it's brought a lot of, I think the word buzzwords is a good thing to use. I think sometimes they are abused. People will, you know, take something and apply it to themselves when, you know, they don't quite have that, which is why I think it's important to speak to people. But I do feel like it's made people realize, you know, how bad they actually feel. And, you know, it's made, I'm trying to think of a good example of this, but there's some people that have gone through something and not realized what it is, not had a diagnosis, not been able to research that diagnosis and then find out how to help that, which I think, you know, with not always the best place to go, but with the power of Google, you can search how to, you know, how can I help myself with this problem I have? And you will find a list of things that you can start doing to help.
It's like what Rochelle said earlier in terms of having to, or being able to speak to that stranger really helps. Really, it almost breaks the ice, right?
It does,
because the ice is so deep with people you already know. Attempting to break that is just, it's a task not worth fathoming. When you talk to a stranger, when you type it in Google and you say, oh, maybe I'm feeling a little bit sad, you know, maybe I need a little bit of help. Google comes back and says, oh, try this. Or, you know, sometimes Google moves absolutely left.
Yeah.
And can tell you some of the most scariest things.
Yeah,
in the world.
Man.
But generally speaking, it's a good starting point. I completely agree. Yeah. Something else I want to pick up on is you mentioned buzzwords. And another one of the buzzwords that we've stumbled upon recently is about self-care. Now, I wanted to read out a post I saw on Twitter. So it's a picture of a battery. I would say I'd put this on the screen for the viewers, but editing is not my forte, so I'll read it out. You wouldn't let this happen. It's a battery like maybe 25% full, so 75% dead. You wouldn't let this happen to your phone. Don't let it happen to you either. Self-care is a priority, not a luxury. Now, before we get into that, I'd also like to add this comment I saw on the picture, which says, always good to remember that the language of self-care is increasingly used as a way of shifting managerial responsibility onto workers. The real question here is, who's using up all your charge? Which is, I think, a better thing to talk about, because yes, it's true. I wouldn't let my battery on my phone die if I can help it. And I'm probably a little bit less mindful of my own personal social battery, which is a fact, true. However, it is well worth noting that the notion of self-care puts all the responsibility and all the onus onto the individual. And actually, I'm not always the one draining my own battery. Sometimes work's and I love my job, right? Because anyone's listening. But sometimes work is there's a lot of pressure, or there's a lot of things to do, and I could deal with pressure because any interviewers are listening. But you know what I'm trying to say? Like, sometimes life gets in the way, and it's not my responsibility to always fix the external factors. Lots to unpick there. But Rachel, I'll go to you first and let Brendan think. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're right, though, man. Work is a big factor. I think it does drain you a lot. Because, pretty much, if you've got a normal 9-to-5 job, most of your day is there.
Yeah. And then the prime hours of your day as well.
Literally, because that's why people live for the weekend. Mm. Literally. But I think, you're right, man. It does get drained in work. That's like 8 hours your day. You come home, you relax. Oh, but then you have to deep it. You go work. The commute, if you're working from home, you're living your best life, but obviously some people still have to commute. Then you commute, you get home, you get changed, you do something, you watch a bit of TV, then it's time to go bed already.
Yeah.
And then what? You wake up and you're back to square one, back to work. And it is draining, man.
If we look at Mental Coffee NN on Instagram, you talk a lot about fitness and eating well and all those sorts of things as well. Your capacity to do fitness during the working week is reduced. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah.
It can be done, definitely, but at the sacrifice of what? Sleep, perhaps? Your capacity to eat 3, 4, 5 good meals a day is, again, hampered because of the work life. You know, maybe I am petitioning for a four-hour work day and a four-day work week. Maybe I am.
Yeah.
But on a serious note, it is really, really challenging, but self-care is important. So, Brendan, over to you in terms of to try and piece that all together, I suppose.
Yeah, of course. And one thing I just want to quickly pick up on, and I'm only sharing my own personal experience with this, is working from home for me was a big contributor to my spiral down to my mental health issues. But that's only because I worked in a team, and there may be other people that are similar to this, where the team was very, very small. So on a Monday morning, you would have a call and you'd see those people. The rest of the week is just you, your PC, your work. In lockdown, if you imagine, you have that one piece of sociability on that Monday morning, and then you speak to nobody until the following Monday morning. So wow. You'll spend that whole day working. You'll then finish. You've then got nobody to speak to or see after work because you're in lockdown. But some people don't have those friends that they can go out and see. So, some people, the only people they speak to are other people at work. You know, they spend their weekends and don't speak to anybody else. Self-care to me is very important. And going back to the battery thing is, I think it's also important to find who charges you as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, good point.
So you often see about relationships, for example, being, 100-100 instead of 50-50. Mm. But sometimes I disagree, because you can't always be 100. You can't be 100 all of the time. So you want to find somebody who, when you're having a 30% day, you need them to be that 70% and pick up the slack. You know, if you have a partner or a friend, they come home and, I'll wash these dishes for you. I'll do this today. I know you're struggling a bit. But then, when they're struggling a bit, you pick up the slack for them. So it's about dialing that up and down when, you're going through stuff.
If I can ask you, Brendan, and I'm asking purely out of curiosity, because I may benefit from your answer. On days when you're not 100, how explicit are you with that? Is it your mood? Is it you explicitly said, maybe I'm feeling a little bit 75% today, like just so you're aware? Is it maybe... I don't know, how do you communicate that? Is it overt? Is it implicit?
I not try and keep it, like, I don't try and hold it in, because I know it's best to get it out. But I think I try and internally process it before I then start speaking. But the problem is, in that time that I'm internally processing it, other people are noticing that I'm not quite, my normal self. So I think, it's important to say the words for me, just so you know, I am struggling a bit today, just in case you notice my mood has changed. That's learning from the past, because previously I may have, come out, oh, just leave me alone, oh, stop speaking to me. Or
yeah, you lash out, right?
Yeah, lash out at somebody. And that's not who you are. That's just because you're struggling. But I think if you let somebody know with just a short message or sentence like that, I'm just struggling a bit today, so just bear with me, they just give you all the time in the world. And it's important to find those people that, you know, do allow you to be with your own emotions.
I spoke to I was in a training session with a group of colleagues a few weeks ago, and one of my colleagues, I don't know if I should name them or not, I won't, because I don't know. Yeah. She mentioned that her boyfriend often uses the spoons analogy. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but effectively you start off the day, or you start off every day with about 10 spoons.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is how it works anyway. About 10 spoons. But obviously some days you're not operating at 100%. So you might say, do you know what? I'm dealing with about 3 spoons today. Can we just talk about this tomorrow? The spoons is what the unit of measurement is. Well, today, do you know what? I'm having a 10 spoon day. Like, what do you want to do? Let's figure it out.
Mm.
And you're looking at me like it's crazy, but when she explained it, it sounded really useful. And then I dropped it in a few conversations with family and friends, and it turns out they use it as well. So it completely has,
oh, it's a thing.
Has, yeah, flew off my radar, but it is something people use. So if you're listening to this and you want maybe a little bit of a conspicuous way of just saying, you know what, I'm not feeling 100%, or vice versa, I am feeling 100%, the spoons analogy might work for you in terms of how many spoons are you working with today. So I think over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to ask Rochelle randomly, how many spoons are you working with today, mate?
No spoons today, mate. No spoons, yeah,
and
mate.
Just see how he responds.
But so what's a spoon? Like a thing you're doing, or you're meant to finish? Or
your spoons is in your cutlery drawer.
Mm.
You know when like you might have a few friends round, or you've had guests round, or in your bedroom there's about 4 spoons because you've been eating whatever you've been eating.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no spoons left in the cutlery drawer.
Mm.
That's an annoying day for the household, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to cough. Apply that to this analogy as well.
Okay.
I mean, maybe I don't feel like you're buying into it, but if any listeners have bought into it, please get in touch with us.
Yeah,
like,
sorry.
You can also look into percentages. So like, it's, you know, I'm 10%, 20%, you know, one, yeah, or two spoons, I guess.
Yeah, I like numbers, so that works.
He's an accountant. Yeah,
yeah. I like numbers. That's what it is. When he said like 3 spoons, like 30%.
Along the lines of like coping mechanisms and stuff like that, a good way I found of communicating with people, sometimes people don't want to say words like at all. So they don't want to say any words at all. So if you have a partner or a friend, one way I've found dealing with this is find the most random emoji that you can possibly find in your emoji library. Like, it can be as crazy as you want. And whenever you send that emoji to your partner or your friend, you know they're struggling. They don't want to say words. They don't want to do anything. But they'll just send that one emoji and you'll go, okay, right, I even need to be there for you, or you can have another emoji for leave me alone. Just those sort of things, you know, at least you know they're okay, but they've managed to, you know, be able to communicate with you somehow through some means, you know, without saying words.
I'm going to ask you quite a difficult question, I think, because it's dawned on me that all of our examples that we've used
in terms of communicating how
we feel to someone else, has been a suggestion. Now, before I get to my point, when we was in primary school, I used to do this, like this or this, when we're friends or we're not friends.
Yeah.
Or even like we used to play this sick game, looking back actually. Tell me when stop, yeah?
Yeah.
And someone would say stop, and if you like them, we'd be like, oh, I stopped here. If you didn't like them,
I forgot that game, man.
Yeah, sorry to all the children whose feelings I may have hurt by doing this one even. But anyway, to the point I was trying to make. How does a lot of our listeners may not be the person who is struggling with their mental health,
mm-hmm,
but they may be someone who knows someone who is or has struggled with their mental health. What sort of advice would you give them in terms of how they can be a kind listening ear or a supporting shoulder, or, you know, those sorts of things? Because right now we've relied a lot on the person who is suffering or struggling to reach out to others. But sometimes they may not know they're suffering, particularly if we get into the more complex cases of mental health.
How do you know outsiders? It's difficult.
Which question?
How do you know?
How do I know what?
Someone's suffering. Because normally the people that are suffering are good at hiding it.
So there's that. There's those who are good at hiding it. But there's also those who may be in like manic states.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, you could tell when one of your friends off or...
So how do you... So I'll flip that back to you.
Oh,
how can you tell? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, man. Like, you can just tell when someone's not right. If you're a close friend or anything like that, you just know when your friend's not doing right.
So what do you do when they're not doing right?
Try to do something. We've had enough phone calls. We've had a few phone calls, but I mean, like, the main thing that we always go back to is communication, doing something. But I don't know, like, to me, is that just doing something to get your mind off something at that moment in time? But I don't know, man. It's a weird one, isn't it?
Brendan, what do you think? I don't know if I was clear enough when I said what I was trying to say.
No, I mean, I'll talk about the manic states because I think it's quite important. When somebody is in a state of, you know, not being their usual self, whatever their usual self may be, I think it's important to have those conversations when you know they are their normal self and say, when you are in this sort of mood, how would you like me to respond or react or help you?
Okay.
Sometimes when somebody is in that manic state, you can't get across to them because, you know, they're in it. So it's hard to, you know, communicate with them. But when they are in a normal, you know, place, you can say, I really struggled to help you when you was like that. So how do you think next time we could do it? How do you think I could help you when you're next in that frame of mind? You know, what can we do? So yeah, they'll find it a lot easier to speak to you at that point.
I think one thing that unfortunately isn't going to answer a lot of the questions of our viewers is this is difficult. Like, I don't think there is one way.
You can't, man.
But one potential support mechanism, because, you know, we've alluded to the fact that you spend a lot of your prime hours during the workplace, and the workplace can be, again, a source of positivity for you, but also a drainer on your battery as well. So at my workplace, we have a thing called mental health first aiders. That's like a training course. You can do it for, I think it's 2 days. And then you get a badge on your lanyard, which shows that you're a mental health first aider. You're trained to, like, look at certain symptoms and signs of mental health crises. But also, people can come to you to just talk if you want to. Now, if that isn't in your workplace, certainly lobby whoever needs to be lobbied. I'm thinking HR. I'm thinking people who work in EDI.
That's pretty cool, you know.
I want to try it. I really want to try it. That sounds wrong. I want to be trained as a mental health first aider. So certainly check into that. But also, if they do have it, go for it. If they don't have it, make sure they get it. So yeah, that's a piece of advice for you there. I'm trying to find the
number. I'm just thinking about the Project Mind thing 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I bet that wasn't even about then. So that just shows in them 7 years.
It might have been, but we certainly didn't know about it, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm trying to find the number for the Samaritans. Let's find it out here, 1 second. If anyone needs any support, of course, check out Mental Coffee NN. When's your next event, Brendan?
So it's not announced yet. However, here would be a perfect place to announce where the new location is. Okay. So I've always wanted to support local businesses. So I don't want to support the big chains. You know, they make enough money from us. We need to support 100%. Our local community and, you know, help people out. So first I started off with Saints Coffee, who have been absolutely incredible. Please, you know, go and visit, have a coffee there. They're an incredible company with community and well-being at heart. So all props to them, and Ben was an incredible host. But now I have actually partnered with Bewitched. So Bewitched Coffee, which was actually started in Northamptonshire by somebody in lockdown who was made redundant. He then invested his money into creating Bewitched and speaking with Bewitched and, you know, asking them what their sort of goals are. And, you know, they're very much about helping their local community as well. So 10th of December will be the first men's meet, but then 11th of December will be the first women's meet. So we're going to have them on 2 consecutive days. And for anybody that does attend, we do have 10% off coffee, which I don't think Bewitched gives out to anybody else at all.
Go on.
apart from their loyalty club, where you can get their free stuff. But
is Bewitched the new place in Moulton? Is it?
Moulton Park has the new one. The events are going to be, the Moulton Park ones. Yeah,
that's pretty cool, you know.
Go on. Do you know what?
That's sick.
There's a few things I want to touch on there. Because first of all, I did not know Bewitched was local. I did not know it was new.
I thought it was a franchise.
So did I.
So yeah, Bewitched was started in lockdown by somebody from Northamptonshire. So that's why they're all around Northamptonshire. So they go as far as, I believe.
They've grown quick.
Yeah, they've gone really quick.
Well, I wasn't aware of that. I thought it was a London thing. I just assumed it was from London.
Wow. That's pretty sick. Credit to you, because again, people, if it's supported externally, people are more likely to say, you know what, I'll take that risk. If it was like in your kitchen, people might feel like, I don't really know how I feel about going there. But it's supported by an external organization. You're going to get a value added in terms of 10% off. They're all really positive. So 10th of December.
Shout out to them.
Make sure you attend. Make sure if you want to attend, make sure you do. And the 11th of December, if any female listeners are listening, please do attend that as well. And that was with, is it Crystal? Did you say Crystal? Crystal. Is that your girlfriend's name?
No, Caitlin.
Caitlin, sorry. My memory.
That was close, Gavan.
Sorry. So just so you're aware as well. So obviously, 10th of December is the next Mental Coffee Meet for men. And 11th is the next Mental Coffee Meet for women.
And how do they do that? They contact you for Instagram or?
Yeah, so we're in the process of setting up an RSVP, but some people don't want to really confirm that they're attending. They just want to show up on the day. So it's quite hard to confirm numbers to anybody. But all I'll say is the most important thing for me right now is getting the word out there. Yeah. So if you do see the post when I share it, confirming the 10th of December and the 11th, please send that to, you know, your dad, your mum, your aunt, your friend. Share it as much as you can, because you don't know who it is in your followers list or anything that might be struggling. We also are on Facebook now, so if you do only use Facebook, then we are on their Mental Coffee Northampton.
Love that. It's worth noting as well, if you're not quite ready to attend a sort of face-to-face coffee chat just yet, then you can contact the Samaritans on 116123. They are available for support as well. There's a bunch of different organizations that support with mental health. I'm thinking Mind, mentalhealth.org.uk, loads of different organizations. And you know, reach out, you know, give it a try. Try a bunch of different things. Try a coffee. See what you think. And Brendan, we can attest to this now. Of course, we've had a conversation with the guy for over an hour. He's you know, really friendly. So make sure you check him out and follow Mental Coffee NN on Instagram and all the other channels as well. So I think it's a good time to wrap it up there.
Yeah, I was just going to ask one thing. Is it a monthly thing or is it like a...
So it's once a month. It originally was once every 2 weeks, but I think attesting to your Project Mind, I started with too many meets to begin with. So it became... quite a lot to do, so we're just scaling back a bit until it's, you know, naturally growing and the numbers are increasing, and then we'll look at trying to do them more regularly, because I know it's quite important for people to have that thing to look forward to in a month, you know, doing one thing a month, if it might be the only thing you do, is a little bit long. So we'll just see how it goes, and hopefully a bit sooner.
Can I ask the numbers are how many people actually come to the coffee meeting?
The most we've had is around 8 people. We had around 3 to 4 people who would regularly attend, just because it was nice for them to have that regular thing. Typically it can be anywhere between, you know, it could just be one person that comes and I just have a chat with them, you know, can change every time, but you know, as even if I sat there and nobody turned up, which obviously wouldn't be great, but even if I sat there and nobody turned up, for somebody to go, if I need to, I can go and speak to that guy, he will be there and he is that constant, then that's all that matters.
We started this conversation by going over some really, really important statistics, and I think it's worth noting as well, these statistics are people, it's lived experiences, it's not just data. We also mentioned Tyson Fury, and one of the things he mentioned as well was about consistency in his life and routine and how important that is. So Brendan, listen, props to you for putting, you know, your energy on the line, you know, to try and make a difference in and build that legacy you spoke about. It's really commendable, and I think look, from our perspective, this has been in some ways a really challenging conversation.
100%.
You know, making us think about, you know, our practices and the practices of those around us, but also it's been an enlightening conversation as well, and a hope-filled one as well, because you've given us a lot of things to take away and implement in our own lives. If you're a man struggling with your mental health, please don't be afraid to sort of reach out and you know, try a few times as well. We're all on a journey, I feel, and I think it's something that hopefully if we have this conversation in 1, 2, 3 years time, we're going to notice marked differences in our own experiences, but equally in those statistics and those numbers. suicide being the biggest killer of men below 50 is not good enough. Society, we need to step up, and we need to
that's such a scary support fact, each other. Yeah. Such a scary fact.
Right, so that has been Before Our Friends Die on the Aki and Selfish Digital Network. You've been joined by me, Kavan.
Me, Rush.
And our fantastic guest, Brendan. So thanks so much for Brendan for joining us. Stick around, because this time next week, you're going to be able to hear from Brendan as we get to know him. We ask him our signature 6 questions about Brendan. So stay tuned in for that. It's worth noting as well, if you want to get in touch with us and keep in touch with us, please do follow Before Our Friends Die Pod. Cough there. Before Our Friends Die Pod on Instagram, but also Aki and Saltfish on Instagram too, or Twitter. If you've got any questions or comments, please do email akiandsaltfish@gmail.com, and do not forget, most importantly, to like, comment, share, subscribe, all those positive things. I keep going to cough. Lastly, if I could ask you one thing, share this episode and all of our episodes with a friend. I'm sure you'll agree there's an important message in here somewhere, so share it with a friend, a family member, or anyone you care about, and it will really help us out. So help us, help you, help them. Take care. See you soon.
Shout out to Brendan, man. I'm going to come to, I'm going to surprise you on one of the events.
Yeah, it'll be good. I'd love to just say one last thing is that,
yeah, go ahead, man.
You know, I think making somebody else happy or feel worthy doesn't cost a penny. Doesn't cost anything to speak to somebody, compliment them, say something nice to them. And I'll say a small quote from one of my favorite films, which as a guy, not many people admit to loving musicals, but I will say it with my chest. But yeah, the noblest art is that of making others happy. So if you have the power to do that, then why wouldn't you use it?
We love that, Brendan. And just before we sign off on that note, just out of curiosity, what musical is that from?
Great Showman.
Okay.
I was thinking high school musical.
Love that. Brendan, thank you so much. Yeah. Love that. Take care.
Cheers.